Greetings. Yeah, so I that's a great presentation to follow up on, especially also from the one this morning about an hour ago, because we can talk about some of those things that were the tips and tricks. We can talk about some of the regulations and blend that into what I'm going to discuss here in the next 20 to 30 minutes. I'm just going to focus on what we call the 20 critical security controls. That is a blend of things like the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. It's a blend of ISO, COBIT, lots of other best practices guidelines. But for us in Kroll, when we go out to our clients and talk about proactive work to set up an actual strategy before a breach rather than after the breach, we just try to focus on the critical issues, because you can get bogged down in a lot of unnecessary details, so you can go into what's considered a reasonableness standard. Because a lot of the guidelines and a lot of the case law that's out there when it comes to things like FTC consent decrees or the SEC levying assessments against entities that have cybersecurity failures, reasonableness ends up being the most common standard. So we're trying to set people up to be reasonable and ensure that they just, again, have the minimum. They can always go above the minimum. So at least if they're at the minimum, when they come in down the road after an incident, you can talk about the maturity during and before that incident, and somebody can have a less than draconian finding on what might happen in your entity or your client's entity. So that gets broken down into three basic things. The components can go from right to left, even though the arrow's left to right. We talk about the end and then go to the beginning. The end is where you have what you call your maturity modeling. Demonstrate your maturity. Show that you're repeatedly setting up processes and people and technology to have something in place that's resilient. And you're using some sort of framework, preferably NIST at a minimum, on top of anything else that might apply. And this, in this kind of industry, there's obviously a lot of other things you have to consider with a lot of the IP and other copyright issues that incorporate a lot of other standards, but NIST covers quite a bit of that. And then from the beginning, you have to set the tone or set the narrative as to what kind of entity or what kind of department your security program is going to be. You don't have to spend $250 million, but you can't have nothing. So somewhere in the middle there, you have to tier the response that you're going to prepare yourselves for when you start to get to that point of having to consider when and how you're going to deal with an incident, because an incident will occur. That comes from just a general attacker or hacking theory now that is pretty well founded and almost 100% accurate, which is if you make sure that you have reasonable measures implemented, the attacker will have to have used extraordinary methods to be able to get into your network to cause any sort of significant damage. Obviously, somebody might have the daily phishing attacks that just bog down spam filters. Somebody might have the daily legacy boxes that don't have certain types of antivirus updated, that Windows NT vulnerabilities are placed on there. Those are going to be common kind of white noise that can be damaging if you don't pay attention to it, but those aren't necessarily things that a resilient network will have a problem dealing with. You want to make sure that the bad guy is doing more work than what's necessarily their normal course of doing bad work to get them into your network. It's all about basically making the path of least resistance more resistant and more resilient, rather than making it easy on them. And the third part of that is making sure that you're, when you do have an incident, you're able to respond in a rapid and reasonable fashion, and effective fashion, because it's important to have framework, it's important to have structure, it's important to have senior executives that are trained, and threat analysts that are trained, but you have to be able to have those playbooks, those runbooks, knowing how to deal with the incident. And that's a lot where incident response planning and tabletop exercises are extremely invaluable in preparing yourself for that. What's evolved is kind of what we're championing through this whole presentation, but what started was this. Perimeter security was all you needed to do. You know, put in some basic things, some basic firewalls, some basic IDS or IPS, and all of a sudden all your problems were solved. And clearly that doesn't happen. That doesn't solve everything. That solves very little. That's more of an alerting mechanism in a lot of ways. Some prevention in there, but a lot of alerting goes on. And then there became the defense in depth kind of paradigm of having people understand that you have to weave in and out what's going on with your security posture and the software that you buy and the tools that you buy and the people you hire. And again, that led to too many Swiss cheese holes in the problems that have occurred, rather than just give into the fact that an entity is going to be compromised, and you need to figure out how to deal with that compromise. It's not unlike the concept of when you're driving or when you get older and your body breaks down, you're going to have to face various ailments and deal with them accordingly with your doctor and the medicines you take. The same kind of thing has to apply to a network. You just have to think about what you're able to withstand in terms of a problem and how you're going to build out your team to focus on that, which starts with the very basic thing is what's the most important thing you need to protect inside of your network, which for anybody in this business, obviously IP is a big part of it. Anywhere else, payment card data is a significant part of the merchant space. Healthcare has to worry about HIPAA data. So every industry has its own kind of set of crown jewels, and that's going to be what you start to harden up for the various things that end up comprising the critical security controls. This goes back to the assumption of the breach theory just in two very simple concepts. With enough time, resources, and commitment, an attacker will get into the network of their choice. It's not just an assumption, it's a fact. So the question is do they want to dedicate the time, do they want to dedicate the commitment and the resources to your network, or do they want to leave and go to somebody else's network and focus on something that's less sturdy and less capable of being resilient? As I discussed about two slides ago, here's kind of the way to look at your evaluation of your crown jewels or where to focus your energies. Intellectual property is in the middle because I think that's just sort of a common thing that everybody has to be concerned about, whether they are a software company or whether they're a healthcare provider. There is intellectual property that exists in every business, so it's going to be probably the most common thing that you have to protect. And then the layers of that depends on whether it's source code, whether it's somebody's PowerPoint about business intelligence or some other kind of IP. And then on the outside, you have kind of the cycle of how you handle all that intellectual property or the crown jewels. How it becomes intellectual property, how it gets passed around within the company and outside of the company, how it gets reproduced. And then, the last three are kind of in the same category of when it starts to move around from point A to point B to point C. The critical security controls have to be in all of these. And you have to consider all that just because, having been a career Secret Service agent, you have to consider the security, the term they use, and Ryan before was a prior service could attest to this, 360 degrees of protection, above, below, all around. You just have to always be ready, and that's why you, of course, empower your security teams and your employment staff to be ready and empowered to look for suspicious activity in any way, shape, or form, so you don't just think of it as a Monday through Tuesday thing, and then Wednesday through Friday, I forget about it, and Saturday and Sunday, I forget about it, and then I worry about it again on Monday. It has to always kind of be in the minds of whoever is dealing with that sensitive data. Here we have... This is just a general slide to talk about, sort of the way that people have in time linearly looked at what we look at. We worry about our threats, and then we think about what our risk appetite is and our motivation to try to counter those threats, and then we put in the kind of controls to sort of combat those threats. The second part is the framework section, leveraging a framework. Most people now are familiar with the National Institute of Standards and Technology's cybersecurity framework, which came out about 4 years ago. There are various standard publications in draft format that are spin-offs of the framework and that allow you to kind of add to what the framework says at a minimal level. But Kroll really likes this because it's very, very well-founded. There are a lot of government agencies, and particularly the both administrations, the Obama administration and the current administration, will endorse this as a very, very key cybersecurity framework to follow. Many other regulatory agencies are following this in some way, shape, or form to overlay their own framework. So it ends up becoming just a very, very common baseline, which leads to probably the best slide of all, which is there'll be a copy of this passed around because we don't need to be worrying about that. The benefits, we talked a little bit about that. So let's go to the key component, and then I'll go in reverse here. The 20 controls themselves, here we go. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but we'll highlight the ones that are very, very common shortfalls, what we see in the breach investigations that we conduct. quite frankly, asset inventory. By the way, this isn't in ascending or descending order. This is just how they're put up there. It's not a question of what's the most important versus least important, but I will say that asset inventory is a huge concern for us when we deal with breach investigations. Being able to have a company tell us, number one, like say, where a laptop with a piece of malware is physically located in the company. Number two, who that laptop is assigned to in the company. And number three, what is on that laptop. You know, whether it's programs, certain pieces of intellectual property, that is a huge, huge problem that leads to a lot of disarray and confusion at the beginning of an intrusion investigation. Controlled use of admin privileges, that's a very, very key component to what we see as championing that to people to understand how to control service accounts, admin accounts, domain controllers, but also where we see a lot of hacking occurring by not necessarily the best of the best, but just very good adversaries are learning how to take over these types of accounts and then spreading their bad stuff throughout the network based on the escalation of privileges they get by being an admin inside of that network or being able to own a domain controller and dumping all the accounts tied to that domain. And then just the third one that would be very important for us to talk about is on the reverse or on the proactive side is pen testing and red team exercises. I can't stress enough the importance of being able to test and test and test and test. Whether you're mandated to do it or whether you choose to do it or how you do it, you should always test your network. Test it with a different vendor every year. Test it with a different set of internal people every year. Do something that shakes it up and gives people an unconventional approach to your network so you know how to basically take all the different types of opinion, put it in a room and brainstorm where the problems lie. And red team exercises, obviously there's different degrees of how you test a network. Penetration testing is the approved hacking of a network by an entity. And then red teaming can come in varying forms, whether it's, you know, war games type scenarios or phishing exercises. I strongly encourage folks focus on things like that when it comes to being able to learn how to be resilient in your network, because you'll get nice reports that talk about a lot of nice information that comes out of that exercise, and you can use that as a benchmark for the next year, for the next year, for the next year, so you're slowly seeing the progress that may occur. And I'll back up here to the two other slides that I just kind of glossed over. This is just a little bit more of drilling down into what the cybersecurity framework talks about with respect to how you break down the different kind of levels of controls and the terminology. And then what I like to show here is the portion that talks about references on the right. You start to learn that there's a lot of overlay with, like I said at the beginning of the presentation, lots of different types of methodologies and not just NIST. You'll see a lot of international standard organization references in here. You'll see a lot of COBIT. So the information technology people inside of your company and the information security people inside of your company can learn how to speak all those different languages and apply that to that NIST framework that gives you this great guideline that you can then apply to how you build out your strategy and your governance. Tiered frameworks are also very important. Taking it from somebody that just basically with their hair on fire figures it out as they go along to fully embedded, fully integrated, very repeatable processes. That's, you want to have some sort of scale. There's no definition to how many tiers you have, but you want to make sure that you have some sort of iteration. So you show those benchmarks to your inside folks, the stakeholders on the inside, but also to make sure that your external stakeholders, particularly regulators, can see the progress that's being made, because that would be a very, very, very important thing to show the reasonableness standard if there is ever an incident. If you're at year zero and you're doing terrible, but at year three you're doing average, and at year four you have a breach, you're probably going to come out a lot better at year four than how you were at year one. So you have to understand that this is all going to be a bit of a sliding scale. It's going to be gradated, and you just have to appreciate that it'll take some time, but the outside parties that come in with those hammers, so to speak, should appreciate that as well, because they see that structure inside of your environment. So when you get to that maturity findings level, it can get broken down into three other types of subcategories, which is people, processes, and technology. And these are just some examples of what we see, what regulators see as a huge reoccurring problem when they do their evaluations, when they do their examinations inside of networks. I'm going to just focus on technology, and you can look at the other categories and subcategories, but the fact remains is that people think that by buying widgets and by putting things on their network, that's going to solve your security problem, and nothing could be further from the truth. There's a lot of great technology out there, particularly in this building. You see at any conference like RSA, that is something that helps supplement your security posture. It does not solve your security posture. People and processes also need to be airtight in order for technology to work properly. I can't tell you how many times we go into a network intrusion investigation, whether as an agent or as a consultant, and we see somebody with a $5 million tool that's improperly built and it's led to failure. It doesn't necessarily lead to the breach, but it might have led to not learning about the breach earlier. It might have improperly detected a false positive because it wasn't configured properly. But somebody was told, hey, we bought this tool from Acme Cyber Company and it's going to solve all our problems, and that's just not the case. So you need to make sure that you have intelligent people and ironclad processes that can take whatever technology you pay for at $0 or $1 million and learn how to tune it to what the capabilities and the needs are of your corporation. This paradigm needs to change, where you worry about technology first and then governance last. The preferred method is to just flip it and make sure that you start with your governance and actually apply a lot of common risk management principles and other GRC principles that a lot of entities now recognize as having very good, strong cybersecurity foundations. And it's really important, so when you have to brief people inside of a company that may not be technically proficient, such as your chief risk officers or your COOs or your CEOs, when you start to speak in governance terms, they're going to understand it a lot quicker and respond to your needs a lot better as a professional that needs to maybe get more resources or more funding to help on the technical side of the house. And then in the middle of all that, of course, is how it actually works, is doing the day-to-day stuff, late at night or early in the morning, sitting up, so you have your strategic, your tactical, and operational benchmarks set up, so you're able to actually make things work on a regular basis. If I'm out today, then somebody else can come fill my spot and sub in for me, and you have that procedure just kind of like automated almost. Not necessarily in a technical way, but you've just practiced it, you've drilled it in your head so frequently, and you've briefed everybody, and you've got really good policy behind all that. That ends up being kind of governance woven through everything else, and then you can start to worry about the technical controls, the tools, the logging mechanisms that you need in order to help get your systems ready for being alerted to an incident and learning how to respond to those incidents. So I will just finish with just summarizing the quick and dirty version of what we did. And that's, of course, mentioning that narrative, having that plan in place, having an identity in place, and then choosing what you believe is the preferred framework. I know we talk about NIST. Doesn't have to be NIST. We just encourage NIST because it's well-founded. You can choose something else if it's nuanced and it's more applicable to the particularly obscure region of your industry. That's fine as well. But pick something to have as a guide. And then use that GRC thinking to take that guide, to operationalize that framework, and then start to test the maturity of that framework through various things, having people come do regulatory examinations, have audits, pre-audits we call them, or gap assessments, have somebody come in before you have an ISO 27001 audit and see the state of your network. We do this all the time for PCI clients. We'll obviously have the capability to do PCI compliance audits during the event, but we can come in before and take our expertise and tell them, here's your homework for the next 6 months before you bring somebody in there. And by just summarizing it in those four bullet points, you're going to end up being a lot more successful had you had no plan at all. So that's my take. So anybody have any questions?
Yeah. You can take one of those off the chair. Question in the back?
Oh, hold on.
The slide with the color codes. Gare? There it is.
What that, by the way, the color coding, if you go back one more slide, Gare, two more slides, sorry. That color coding complies with the function identifier. So if you have this slide and those other slides, you can see what those categories are supposed to mean. And the framework explains that to some degree. And then you have what's called a function and category identifier that ports to the function identifier. That leads to the most understandable thing in here, which is the category. Everybody can see what mitigation means or what data security means. And by having it broken down into these subcategories, you get an organized outlook that, again, gives you some planning and some maturity, you know, over the next 6 months, over the next 18 months, you know, at a time of your choosing.
Any other questions for Eric? All right, let's give him a round of applause. Thank you so much. That was great. Fantastic.